Well, tonight we're going to talk about something a little different, and this is going to be, what did you expect? What we're going to talk about is the fact that there's a lot of times where we find ourselves being controlled by other people's expectations. Some of us are more susceptible than others. Some of us would like maybe our wife or husband to be more susceptible than they are, but we often live out other people's expectations, or we let them control what we think or do, or what we think we should do, or how we do what we do. And that can be a very difficult thing. And that's not always what God intends. Now, as a balance to that, sometimes they're right. And we're going to talk about that for a minute. I'm not saying that people are always wrong, because, you know, some people, well, maybe Disney, I mean, they say, follow your dream, as if that's always going to be right. It's not always right. You know, my daughter was Little Mermaid in the musical at her school, and that was like a dream come true, and she still kind of lives out that dream from time to time. But how many of you seen Little Mermaid, the Disney movie or whatever? She really disobeyed her dad. You realize that? The whole movie was because she was disobeying, and had she not done that, her life would have been way better. But she followed her dream. So, you know, following your dream is not always the right thing. There are people who might have a correction for you that would be better for you, maybe difficult for you to hear, but it may be the right thing for you to hear. So, like I said, these 3 weeks in this series all came out of the story of the characters in the New Testament, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. So we're finishing up there. This is the last time we see Lazarus and Martha in the Bible. We do see Mary later. Anybody tell me where we see her? She's at the tomb. Yes, she's one of the Marys. There's like 3 or 4 Marys there. It's really confusing, but there's a lot of them. It was a very popular name at the time. So let's look here at chapter 12 of John. 6 days before Passover celebration began. 6 days also before what? Crucifixion. 7 days before crucifixion. I mean, this is it. This is the end of his life. And Jesus knows this. They don't know this. They don't know. And remember, we talked about Bethany. It's just a 30, 40-minute walk from Jerusalem. This is where Jesus was staying that entire week. Now, how many of you were raised in maybe a tradition like Lutheran, Catholic, something like that? Anybody? Okay, in those traditions, you follow Passion Week more than we do in maybe the Assemblies of God. But in Passion Week, you can go through the New Testament. You can actually see what happened on each of those days. You know, the Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Maundy, Thursday, you may have heard of, you know, walking right into the Passover and then the crucifixion and the Good Friday and all. So this is right before that, 6 days before. And it plays into the story because Jesus knows. Remember, the characters in the story don't know what's coming up. You know, because you know the end of the book. They didn't know this. So what happens is 6 days before, and John knows this because John's writing the story. He was there. He knew the beginning and end. So he's filling you in with all these details, which is comical because Lazarus was raised in chapter 11, right? And then chapter 12, he says, remember the guy he raised from? I think it's funny. Okay, the man he had raised from the dead. A dinner was prepared in Jesus' honor. Martha served, of course, and Lazarus was among those who ate with him, which is what the men did, okay? Then Mary took a 12-ounce jar of expensive perfume made from the essence of nard, and she anointed Jesus' feet with it, wiping his feet with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance. But Judas Iscariot, the disciple who would soon betray him, said, "That perfume was worth a year's wages. It should have been sold and the money given to the poor." Not that he cared for the poor, he was a thief. And since he was in charge of the disciples' money, he often stole some for himself. I'm sorry, I have to stop right here. This is an interesting thing. Think about this. Did Jesus know that? Did the disciples find out later that he was a thief? Did they know the whole time? I mean, this is 6 days till it's all over. The disciples are all scattered. Whatever camaraderie they had at this moment was broken up. We know, you know, Judas obviously betrays Jesus. Then he goes and commits suicide. I mean, I've read this so many times and wondered, was this Jesus just giving him a chance? I wonder about that. See, I believe God gives us chances. What if? And I'm just asking this question. Jesus was going to be betrayed. He was going to be crucified. He was going to be the sacrifice. That was God's plan. I wonder, though, sometimes if he leaves some of the specific details and if he was still letting him have a chance. I don't know. Jesus replied, "Leave her alone." Notice he didn't say, leave her alone, thief. Leave her alone, traitor. He said, leave her alone. She did this in preparation for my burial. You will always have the poor among you, but you will not always have me. When all the people heard of Jesus' arrival, this is another just kind of little details John throws in, because this has nothing to do with the story, really, but it says, when people heard of Jesus' arrival, they flocked to see him and also to see Lazarus, the man Jesus had raised from the dead. Lazarus had become quite a celebrity, obviously. Then the leading priests, this is just comical, decided to kill Lazarus too, for it's because of him that many of the people had deserted them and believed in Jesus. I wonder if that was a big threat to Lazarus. You know, you think about it, like, he goes, hey, go ahead. I don't care. I've been there before. I don't know. And I wondered this too. He was dead 4 days. You know, the Bible says to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. I wonder, and maybe I'm weird, I don't know if you wonder these things, what was Lazarus doing for 4 days? I wonder if he was saying, really? I got to go back? Because this is pretty cool. This is the goal, and you're sending me back. So I wonder if this threat meant anything to him. I'm sure it was no big deal at all, probably nothing to them. So the threats came. All these people came. Yeah, I want to stay dead this time. Go ahead, have at it. You know, I don't know. So let's talk about this for a minute. Their expectations. There's always expectations, aren't there? Everywhere you go, in every walk of life, at every level of your life, there are people who have certain expectations for you. And I don't care if you could be walking into Quick Trip, and based on the way you dress or the way you look or whatever, there are going to be certain expectations of who you are. How much money you have, how you're going to talk, how you're going to act. And we've all had this happen where certain things are expected of you, and without even knowing it, depending on your personality, you may or may not meet those expectations. I know some people, they are just rebellious down to their pinky toes. And if they have an inkling that somebody has an expectation of them, they will not do it. I've seen people like that. And I know other people who they fit in and they will do whatever. You know, there's people pleasers, there's other times. I get a little frustrated with myself. My kids and my wife kind of tease me about this and friends of mine who know me well. But I think it's an effort, and I'm trying to make it sound better maybe than it is, but I think it's an effort to get along with everybody. But I pick up accents like immediately. I can be talking to a complete stranger and then I hear it's almost like it's out of body where I hear myself saying something and I said, I did not just say that. And I'm watching them to think, please don't think I'm patronizing you or trying to be cool. It just happened. It's kind of sometimes it's embarrassing. And then they'll say, you're doing it. Like, okay, I'm just talking. But there's other times when people have expectations of you, and it may seem to make you push you in a direction that's not really what God has called you to do or what you know you want to do. It's not the life that you're intending to live, but because these expectations are so heavy on you, it changes the way you're living. Now, like I said, to balance this, they could be right. You need to really find out. There are times when other people's expectations aren't the problem, you're the problem. You ever had this happen where everybody thinks a certain thing and you're the only outlander? They may be right. You got to ask that. You got to find out, hey, maybe I'm wrong. You may need to find a real trusted friend to say, hey, is it me? Am I wrong? Because I'm not trying to be wrong, but you may not know. You think about this. If the pressure is for you to do a certain thing, then maybe you need to live up to what those expectations are. Because sometimes the expectations are reasonable and right. There's an old story about Alexander the Great that in his great army, there was at one point he came upon and a a young soldier was being reprimanded for falling asleep on the watch. And he overheard that the young man's name was Alexander. So Alexander the Great, the story goes, went up there. Of course, everybody was deathly afraid because he, in that culture, he could just have him killed immediately for whatever. So he walks up and he says, "Is it true? Is your name Alexander?" And he said, "Yes, sir, it is." And the story goes that he said, "Then you need to change your ways or change your name," and walked away. Think about that. Sometimes the expectations are reasonable and you need to do what's expected. Sometimes there's expectations on you and you just didn't understand what they were. Sometimes you need to just clarify what the expectations are. And I know that sounds like what we talked about 2 weeks ago, but thinking specifically of that story of Alexander or maybe a job situation, you know, you think back to, you know, if you were in high school or college and had a syllabus, you know, how many times were you in the first day of class and somebody raised their hand and said, "Is this going to be on the test?" And I remember teachers getting so furious about that. But ultimately, that's what matters. I want to know what's expected because I want to meet these expectations that you have for me, but I need to know what they are. I need to clarify exactly what they are. Some people feel like they can never measure up to other people's expectations. No matter what I do, it's not good enough. Sometimes it could be a misalignment in your desires and your interests. Maybe you just don't like what you're doing, and that's why you're not meeting these people's expectations. If that's the case, that's on you, and you need to figure it out and maybe get a different job. I know I've mentioned this before, but it always amazes me when a waiter or waitress doesn't like their job. And you could just tell. I think you are a server, and you don't like serving. I want you to find something you like to do, and don't do this. You know, of course, I would never say that, and I always tip them well and hopefully treat them really nice and try to brighten their day. And I have at times also just said, I would never do this with my wife and kids because they'd be so embarrassed, but I've also said, "Are you having a bad day?" You know, because you can tell sometimes. And it's so funny. Sometimes they'll just tell you, "Oh, yeah, I've had the worst customers today." You're like, "Okay, I could see that happening. And I hope we're not one of them." No, you guys are great. Oh, good, because, you know, don't want anything slipped in my food or any weirdness. But so let's get to the story and talk exactly about what I think this story, how it applies to us and people's expectations of us. Because what I'm talking about tonight are the expectations of you that are not right and are not the right expectations. And I know all of us have had those experiences and will continue to have them because we're human beings. We live in a fallen world with fallen people and Christians who don't live. I mean, that's just the world. So let's talk about this for a minute. What Mary did was an extravagant, extravagant display and act of worship. I have read this story many, many times, and I've never, ever, ever felt like I could understand what she was doing. Because I read this story and I think, it's a year's salary. Jesus didn't need that. He may not have even wanted it. I don't know. And I had to look up and look into it. What in the world is nard that it would cost a year's salary? In any culture, I don't care what culture, that's expensive, whatever it is. And what it is, it's an essential oil. How many are into essential oils here? Okay. See those hands? Those hands shot up. Okay. It is an oil, and the world has always operated on these things. It's an essential oil, and I was reading. It was really comical because I felt like I was actually hearing a pitch on oils because it was talking about how some people thought it did this and this and this and this and quite a few things. It had a lot of medicinal uses, and obviously it smelled nice. They said it was a very thick oil. It was an oil from a small flower. The plant, they said it was about 3 feet, 4 feet high, small plant with a flower, and then you had to extract the oil. You know, most plants don't give off too much oil. They said it was very thick oil. So it had something to do, and it was only found in the Himalayas. And so you're talking about China, India, those mountainous regions. So it was very expensive and pretty rare. So the question might be asked, where did she get this? Well, theologians have asked that and nobody knows. It could have been the thing that made the most sense to me is it could possibly have been a family heirloom. Something like this would have been passed down generation to generation. I was even reading that things like this in a family, in that culture, could even have been borrowed against. It would have been worth that much money. That you would have still held it at your house, but you could have borrowed money against it and then paid back, and it would still be sitting there in a treasured place in your house. This kind of a thing, this kind of an oil would have been used in burial rites. That's why Jesus makes that reference. Because she's doing this for my burial. Now, think about the fact that nobody probably got it. Nobody expected him to die in a week, and she was preparing him for that. Nobody understood that. Even her, she had no idea. Jesus did, and he foreshadows that and says that straight out. And of course, when John's writing it, I'm sure as he wrote that, he thought, we didn't even know. And she was anointing him, and none of us were doing that. We were just having a good time. We were kicking back, watching the game, all the guys. And he's getting ready to die. And she knew it. But think about the extravagance in her worship. I really was trying to apply that to my own life. And I'm trying to imagine, what could I do as an act of worship that would be that extravagant? Can we think about that for a minute? Your own life? No matter what your salary is, think about what a year's wages is for you. A year. It doesn't matter what you're making. That's a lot of money for you. What would be an equivalent act of worship today? I mean, we're not going to do oils on anybody or whatever. But what would you do? What would that look like? What kind of worship would you be giving that would be worth that much? Because most of when I think of worship, I think of what we just did as singing, and that is certainly worship. But worship is far more broad of a category than that. When we give God honor, we give him honor in way, way, way more ways than just singing. Because if it was limited to singing, you know, most of us would fall short. I mean, very few can sing like the worship team we have, and it has to be more than that. And most of us can't play multiple instruments like Pastor Nick, and that's worship. Our acts of worship is more than that. I mean, acts of worship go beyond that. Acts of worship can be things like giving. I remember this happened years ago. I was new in the ministry, and there was a lady in our church. She was a really nice lady. I didn't know her really well. I knew her husband. And when he passed away, as an act of worship, she gave this huge amount of money to the church to be given to missionaries. And our church, I remember this happening because I was on staff, and I don't remember how it was communicated to the church body or not, but I remember all the missionaries we supported for Christmas that year, they sent them all $2,000. And there was like 50, 60 missionaries we supported. It was a lot of money. But can you imagine what that was like for those missionaries? To have a gift at Christmas of that much money. It was, I remember the letters flooding in. We were getting phone calls from all around the world. These people are, is this for real? What happened? What's going on? And this was an extravagant act of worship on her part. It was an amazing thing. Amazing. But that's money, which is awesome. But that's not something all of us would even have access to. But what would it look like? What, anybody have any other ideas? I'm just curious what you're thinking, because I can't come up with any good ones. Anybody have an idea? Cleaning someone's house, shopping for them? Paying a hospital bill? Anything else? I mean, I know it ties to money for most of us in our thinking because John put a price tag on it, but anybody else? Brand new home for a homeless person?
I'm in this church that's on hard times and on the front porch and things like that.
Just bless people anonymously with groceries or whatever, and yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about, you know, this is a financial cost that John uses, but, you know, there's other costs to us where we might be just giving of yourself and spending time serving somebody where, you know, you normally wouldn't. I don't know. It's big. The story is about everybody's reaction to that, because the expectation that was put on her was not approving of her extravagant worship. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Obviously, the money was a lot of money. And a lot of the people sitting there, even the other disciples, now in the book of John, it only mentions Judas, but in the other accounts of this, the other disciples feel like it's over the top. extravagant as well. And perhaps it, well, it was. And you could justify all day long that that money could have been spent another way or could have been more honoring to Jesus in different ways. But that's not what Jesus says. She wasn't approved. It probably was not acceptable for her to even be in the company of the men at that point. Even though Jesus showed extraordinary respect to women of his day, it still was kind of a guy's club. And John is careful to mention that Lazarus is sitting with the men eating, Martha is serving, and then Mary comes in and does this. But here's the crux of the story that I want us to get today. Jesus was the honored guest. I'm sure you caught that in the very beginning of that section. The dinner was in his honor. Nobody else's honor, Jesus's honor. And so Jesus tells them, he says, leave her alone. She's doing this in my honor. Here's what I want you to hear from this if you hear nothing else. When Jesus has the seat of honor in your expectations, then nobody else's expectations should matter. Now again, there's a balance there. Your wife's better matter, your husband's, you know what I'm saying? But when I'm talking about the people who are telling you always, always negative, the people in your life whose expectations are negative, if you are meeting Jesus' expectations for you, then that matters more than anything else. His expectations outweigh everybody else's expectations. What he told them that day is, I am the person at the seat of honor. She is honoring me. No matter what you think, nothing of what you think matters as much as what I think right now. And I accept this worship from her. That is powerful. Judas didn't like it, but the dinner wasn't for Judas. It didn't matter what he thought. It didn't matter. None of that mattered. Jesus was clearly the guest of honor. Sometimes we need to be the ones that sit at Jesus' feet. Now, she did that. Remember, she did that in the story last week in chapter 11. Or no, the story before that, where she was the one sitting and Martha came in and was upset she was still sitting there. She must have done that a lot. And the other guys hanging out, they were there, but they weren't really maybe perhaps listening. I'm not sure. But I wonder about that. I wonder if something that he was saying or something in that relationship, she heard something from God and she felt compelled to worship to him that way when no one else felt like that. We don't have any other examples other than Mary Magdalene who wept on his feet out of sheer just overwhelming grief at her sin. That's the only other example of this kind of, you know, extravagance at Jesus. If you're doing what you're doing as unto the Lord, then you should be okay with whatever else people say. All their criticisms should be able to just roll off your backs because you know you're doing it for the right reason. If your heart is right and you're following what he's told you to do, then do it with all your heart and all your might and turn your ears away from the criticism. Maybe you've heard things like this. Why do you go to church so much? People don't need to have church 3 or 4 times a week. What's that? You go to church on Sunday, and then you go to a life group on Sunday night, and then you go to church on Wednesday, and then primetimers on Tuesday. What? Why is that? Maybe you hear things like this. Why do you go to that church? The people up in that church, they're all crazy up in there. That's why you go, because you're crazy. All right. Maybe that works for you. Why do you go to that church? I heard those church, they're all hypocrites at that church. They're all this, they're all that. People will criticize whatever. I've worked with people who have had to literally cut off their family because their family didn't want them to change the way Christ was changing them. Well, you think you're too good for us now? You can't sit with us and hang out with the family and drink. You can't be around us now. You don't think our jokes are funny anymore? Sad. I've had them just tell me, I love my family, but they won't let me change. Sad, but true. Because when Christ gets a hold of your heart and he starts to remake you, that can do some things in other people. It can make them shine a light on what they're doing and make them feel even more guilty. And it's not even you, it's them and their own guilt. People can criticize you all day long, and they have a right to it, I guess. But you also have a right to ignore it. And you may have found this to be true, but as you're working and trying to live for Christ, that's not the easiest thing in the world to do. The easier thing in the world to do is go along with the world. You think about it, you know, you've probably seen those, I mean, that just imagery of a, you know, a dead fish is easy to go along with the stream, but a live fish works to swim against it. I've always thought of it like this, and maybe you've never done this, and I don't recommend it, but anybody ever gone up a down escalator? You can be honest. All right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember doing that with a friend one time, and he slipped, and you know those grates on it, those teeth? Oh, my gosh. That was ugly. I mean, it just cut right in there into his knee, and then the pants are ripped right open. But you ever notice that? If you've tried to do that, I'm not saying do it, but just imagine in your mind. You have to exert effort to do it. More than normal walking speed, because normal walking speed is going down. So if you're just coasting, you're going down. That's how the Christian life is. It's a constant work. Any gardeners here? One? There's only one of us, really? Nobody else? All right, for real? Oh. Well, then you will understand this example. Have you ever gone in your garden and worked at it, and then you go in 3 days later, and there's more weeds? That's how it works. You keep working at it, and the rain washes out whatever berms you built to maintain the water, and it takes constant work. That's how the Christian life is. And people often who criticize you for living for him or working for him, or maybe you volunteer in a ministry and they ask, why do you do that all the time? Charlotte, why do you put so much time into decorating around here? I mean, I don't know if they know, but it's all of this effort and it's beautiful. But people could say, why do you do that? Why do you get up at 5:30 and go have breakfast with these crazy guys? Why? Well, it takes work. The Christian life does take work, but it's worth it. And those who aren't working at it, they don't even know it. They don't even know what they're missing. They don't even understand it. It's funny. It seems like in life sometimes, whatever you do, you're going to get criticized. I mean, even no matter what you do. I heard this story the other day. It was kind of funny, kind of corny. But this is, you know, imagine a rural setting, and the father and son are walking a donkey into town, and people are walking by them. And as they're walking by, they overhear some guy say, look at those guys. Both of them are walking, got a perfectly good donkey. None of them's riding. Silly. Criticizing. Expectation was someone should be riding the donkey. So son starts riding the donkey. The next person walks by and goes, oh my gosh, what an ungrateful child. Riding that donkey and making his poor dad walk? That is ridiculous. Ridiculous. So they switch. Now the dad's riding the donkey and the kid's walking. Next person walks by and like, look at that man. He don't even care about his kid. Making his kid walk the whole way, and he's just relaxing on that donkey. At least they could share. Next person goes by, what do you think they see? They're both carrying the donkey. You can't please everybody, every time. Jesus was criticized his entire ministry. His entire ministry. He was criticized. There were people following him all the time. He didn't do the religion right. His disciples didn't fast enough. They ate, they didn't wash their hands. They worked on the Sabbath. He healed on the Sabbath. He didn't do it right. He didn't say the stories right. He was consistently criticized. Now, here's the thing. He was completely vindicated, though, wasn't he, when he raised from the dead? Kind of like that. I mean, he kind of had the trump card. It's like when you raise from the dead, you win. Everything I said and did was right. Now, he didn't come back and say, told you so. But my point is, when you follow him and what he wants you to do, you will also be vindicated. Not necessarily in the same way, but you will be vindicated. The key, though, is to definitely check your heart. Check your attitude. Make sure you're doing what he's called you to do. Check your spirit. It's not godly to be doing the right thing with an attitude. That's not godly. And it's not godly to be doing the right thing and putting it in people's face and whatever. That's not godly. Jesus told them, leave them alone. She's doing the right thing. Nothing that anybody else said mattered. I wonder if, well, I know from reading it, John flat out said, consider the source, didn't he? Judas was the one criticized and he had to throw in. But he didn't mean it, and he was a thief, and he didn't care about the poor, and he betrayed Jesus anyway. We need to consider the source. Now, I know when I say that, I know what you think, because it's what I think. Usually when somebody says, consider the source, you're trying to say, they're a bad person, so don't listen to what they say. That's not what I'm saying. When I'm telling you to consider the source, what I'm saying is, there's times that people are speaking out of a place of pain that you may not know anything about. And what I'm saying is consider the source and don't let that into your spirit and also let it run off your back. And also watch how you respond. You need to have some compassion. Because there's times where people are criticizing you and they have expectations for you, but it's not about you. It's not about what you did. It's not even about what you're doing. It's more about maybe they had a call in their life and they were supposed to volunteer and they didn't. And they feel something for you about that. Maybe they see things happening for you and they're jealous or they're frustrated with their own life and they're speaking out of that frustration. You've heard this cliche, but hurt people hurt people. And a lot of times our response is also not godly. Christ had compassion. Now, he told Judas, leave her alone. But he also didn't say, leave her alone, traitor. He didn't crush him. He said, leave her alone. And we need to make sure our heart is right and to respond to that criticism and those expectations with the right heart. You don't insult back. You don't get offensive. You overlook the offense. Hard, isn't it? Carol just said, like... But if you listen to Judas, catch this. If you listen to Judas, you may miss the opportunity to bless Jesus. I never thought of that before. She blessed Jesus. I don't understand it. I don't like sticky. I mean, I don't even get it. And I don't like strong smells. And we've got three girls, and Theo and I just dying with one of them spray something in the car. Like, really? You couldn't wait till we got where we're going? I mean, open a window or something. You're just like choking. I mean, there's times where I can taste it in my mouth. I'm like, oh my God. So I wouldn't have wanted this, but this blessed Jesus. It blessed him. And if you listen to the haters and you listen to the people whose expectations are like Judas, then you would miss the opportunity to bless Jesus. But in this, make sure your response to Judas is the loving response Christ would have. You could totally misunderstand their response, right? I mean, how many times have you thought somebody said something or thought a look meant something it didn't mean? You got to be really careful. Our response should be about compassion and prayer and serving them and loving them and wondering. Let me ask you another question that might be painful. What if you're the Judas or the hater? Or the complainer, or the one with expectations. I want to ask you one more kind of question that's not in the Bible. I'm just going to ask you, though. It kind of is in the Bible, but isn't it interesting that Mary was the one at Jesus' feet, at least in two of those stories? She was soaking up and listening to everything that he said. And then at the tomb, remember, she went to the tomb, and then they ran back and told the disciples. Did the disciples believe? No. Why not? He said she was preparing him for burial. He had said many times that he was going to be lifted up, that he was a sacrifice for many. I'm the Lamb of the world. I'm the Lamb that takes away the sins of the world. He said these things over and over and over and over and over. But then when he rose and Mary saw it, Mary believed and ran and told him, and then they didn't believe. They thought she was crazy. You know what I wonder about that and the application to us tonight? Make sure you stay at his feet and you listen to what he's saying. because there is power in there, and don't let anybody's expectations of you change what that is. Mary got it. So do you sit and listen? So don't run off and just say, oh, I know what God's saying for me. Make sure you listen first. Make sure you do it in humility. The story doesn't tell us what Mary did. I don't know what she did. And I have no idea. All I know is that Jesus said, leave her alone. Dave, could you put some music on for us? Would you all just shut your eyes for a sec? I know all of us have had times where we've felt that negative pressure from other people's expectations, whether it's in our Christian life or maybe something we were trying to do. It could be in your secular life, in your job, in your whatever. You've felt that before. It could be in a relationship that's close to you, a parent or a child or a spouse. I want to tell you this, that Jesus is for you, though. As you have heard from him and you felt a calling from him and you felt a direction from him and you felt like you're doing the right thing, I want to encourage you. He is saying right now, leave her alone. Leave him alone. He's for you. He is for you. And I want to encourage you to listen to what he's saying above any Judas's or anybody else in your life. No one else's words. There's times where you just have to turn the negative off. And don't listen to them. Shut them out. There's times where you just have to block them on Facebook. You just have to do it. And don't let that stuff into your heart and into your mind and into your spirit. Instead of doubting what God has told you, listen to Jesus, and he says, leave her alone. If you're following him and people don't understand, it's sad, but I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. Sorry, not sorry. If that's you tonight, I just want you to follow me in this prayer. You don't have to pray after me. I just want you to pray with me to him. And then I have one more thing for you. God, for those of us who at different times have felt that negative expectation on us, dragging us down, doubting us, questioning us, telling us we're wrong, looking at us funny, not supporting us, God, I pray that your voice right now would fill us and encourage us. Jesus, you're for us. In fact, repeat this after me. Jesus, you're for me. Let's say it together all at once. Jesus, you're for me. Say it again. Jesus, you are for me. Let's say, Jesus, you believe in me. Jesus, you believe in me. One more time. Jesus, you believe in me. The last thing, with your eyes still closed, I know we talked about it earlier, but I do believe that there are times where we appropriately need to give him extravagant worship, whatever that is. I don't think it's always monetary, but sometimes it may be, but not always. What would that be? What expressions of worship are you sharing with him now, and how could that be made extravagant? He's worth that. He's worthy of that. Like I said, the disciples, none of them knew he was dying in a week, but that was appropriate, extravagant worship right then. And there are times in our lives where it's appropriate for us to give him extravagant worship. And what would that look like? What would it look like? Father, as we close out here tonight, I pray in the name of Jesus that you would just speak to us and encourage us and remind us.